you're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Yasmin, presenter and co-host of the show. We are always keen to hear from people passionate about the environment, conservation, sustainable living and the great outdoors. Please get in touch with either myself via earthwitness.news or Yara via wildeyeadventures.com, or feel free to connect via the UK Health Radio website. On this week's show, Yara will be interviewing explorer, survival specialist and ex-Royal Marine John Sullivan. John, aka Sully, is the founder of Elite Survival Training, an outdoor company specialising in teaching survival skills, both youth and adults in the UK and abroad. Yara met John in the jungles of Borneo back in 2006, and since then they have remained connected, working together in remote locations all around the world, from teaching survival skills in the UK woodland to the deserts of Wadi Rum in Jordan and the Amazon rainforest. Thank you so much for tuning into the show, and we hope you enjoy this interview with Yara and John.
'Cause when you stop to think what nature's given, don't you think it might be time to give some back?
On today's show, we've got a very special guest, and he's a very good friend of mine. His name is John Sullivan. I met Sully in the jungles of Borneo. He was my expedition leader, and we were working on a conservation project deep in the jungles of Tabin Wildlife Reserve. Borneo is the third largest island in the world. It's a part of Indonesia and East Malaysia. So we were out in Tabin for about 2 months building an orangutan rehabilitation centre. This is a place where orangutans have been rescued from negative impacts like deforestation, which unfortunately is going on a lot in Borneo and that part of the world. Sully's going to be talking about living in the wild. He's going to tell you a bit about his background and his experiences of going into the jungle. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the interview. Thank you so much for joining me today, Sully.
Pleasure. Great to be here.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm actually sat indoors at the moment, just looking outside to some beautiful woodland, wishing I was there right now.
And have you been doing any of your work lately?
Yeah, I've been really busy over the course of the summer in the UK woodlands, teaching fire, shelter and navigational skills to various youth groups. So it's been really good. I run a survival company, Elite Survival Training. And I offer training to youth groups, schools, adults. And part of the course will be learning how to make fire, how to make shelter, how to navigate, what to do in the worst case scenario.
In essence, how to live off the land. That'll be for schools and adults, anyone wishing to learn. And then also overseas, that'll be going into remote communities, exploring, doing conservation work or setting up TV programmes.
And the whole idea being is really to give confidence to people to go anywhere in the world. So they're really prepared for almost like the worst case scenario.
And what inspired you to set up this company?
If we go back and look at my history, it was from being in the Royal Marines, training jungles, deserts and cold weather environments. So, you know, being outside really appeals to me. And on leaving the forces, I really wanted to sort of consolidate all my knowledge and all my training. And rather than sat behind a desk looking at the computer doing a 9-to-5, you know, I really wanted to be outdoors and just show people how great it is to be in the woods and just pass on my passion and knowledge to people. And during my time, I served I went to 33 countries in all, a lot of Southeast Asia, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Philippines, Brunei, to Africa, you know, South Africa, all over the Mediterranean, Northern Norway, out into America for the Nevada Death Valley. So it was, you know, a big variety of environments, but all of which, you know, I really did enjoy.
It was whilst doing a trip in 1997, I was in Southeast Asia, our ship had docked in Malaysia, and for some R&R, I went to a set of islands called the Tiaman Islands to do a bit of diving. And up to that point, I hadn't really been exposed to travelling how backpackers may do it. But it was on this experience that it really inspired me, because one of the things that really stuck out was it was a Saturday night. I'm on an island with, you know, very little amenities. I saw all the locals sit down together outside, all very excited. Saw an old TV being bought outside, you know, 1970s style. And then a VHS video player came out. And they're all clapping, they're all jeering. And the video played Rocky. And for me, seeing the pure excitement of the locals in just this natural setting, for me, that really, really got me thinking of, wow, there's these guys, you know, we're all, everyone loves this film. They love this film. What else could be out there that I could share or that we all share together? And that really inspired me to want to go and travel more.
So that's where you initially got your jungle survival knowledge. But where else, what other training or education have you had in that area?
It was from my early experiences in the jungle from the Marines that really awakened me to how great that environment was. So on leaving, I decided I wanted to go to Borneo and to really learn the art of jungle survival. Rather than reading books and watching DVDs, I wanted to see it and witness it firsthand. So I headed off to Sabah and lived with several, you know, remote communities that really just practice a subsistence way of life on a day-to-day basis. And it was through watching and taking part that I really gained some really valuable skills on the whole jungle environment. But the first time in Borneo was 2005. I was still teaching in England and I disappeared there for a month. But more substantial and long period of time was 2006. And I went to this very small village called Padalawang. And it's got a population around about 70 people. No generators, no real access to shops or, you know, medical supplies. The whole life, the whole community is dependent upon the jungle around them. So when you're living with a community and you see how much they respect the environment and how they use it to their advantage, you know, it's very empowering. And you see how important nature is.
How do you feel about coming out of the comfort zone, Sully?
I've always enjoyed stepping out of it. I think it's very important to step out of your comfort zone. That there as a person is where you develop. And when you are out of it, yes, it does feel uncomfortable. It will feel unnatural. But the learning curve is, it's right then at those moments, is knowing how you react and knowing your emotions, you know, knowing how to control them. And once you're able to step out of your comfort zone on a regular basis, you really open your eyes and discover that there's so much more things out there to learn.
You know, you can learn as much as you want in books by studying, but it's actually going out there and doing a real life experience. And we all know how we act day to day by doing our normal routines. But when you step into something new and you don't exactly know how you'll react to it, and you see that you might react in a positive way or a negative way, there's great learning outcomes that can come from this. And by just stepping out of your comfort zone, you know, a tiny piece is really going to be beneficial, because years later, your comfort zone will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is going to enable you to do more things in life. So you can push your threshold in whatever you're trying to achieve.
I mean, your comfort zone is your safe zone. It's your securities. It's the things you know, your friends, your family. And it can be scary sometimes, right? Stepping out of the comfort zone.
Yeah, sure.
It's a good fear, isn't it, to face? Because like you said, that's where you grow. That's where you discover new skills and new talents that you didn't even know you had.
For sure. And it can become very addictive. A lot of people say to me, you know, I've gone to places in Papua New Guinea where not many Westerners have gone. I've really explored and lived with remote communities. And people think, oh, you're really crazy, or, you know, you're mad, or you're really brave. But it was just the development of my comfort zone. And that started from childhood, going out into the woods and exploring. We've all done it when you go out and play and you go walking, but then you get a little bit scared and you turn back. But then the next day you'll go to that same spot and you'll carry on walking. And that kind of developed into, you know, being a civilian and going backpacking around the world. Started off visiting, you know, normal hotspots where backpackers may go. But then once you're feeling really comfortable, you're more, okay, I can push it a little bit further. It's just that curiosity doesn't want to hold you back. And just by being comfortable, you can go and do a lot more.
That's definitely true. And I actually met you in Borneo, didn't I, Sully?
For sure.
Where we connected when you were working as an expedition leader.
Yeah, it was way back in 2006 in a place called Tabin. It was for an orangutan project, and yeah, you were there as a trekker, as a volunteer. I remember it being a very tough project because although living in the jungle can be very challenging, this was a prolonged project for up to, I believe, 30 days. But what made it really hard was the weather. And the weather, I remember being atrocious, being a typhoon above us. So the daily life of such as lighting a fire, to cook your food, to keep your feet dry, to staying warm, these are all extra challenges placed on top of you just to carry out the task of building an orangutan platform.
And we were out there for 2 months.
Yeah, 2 months. You know, we did some pre-training. And as a leader, you know, you've got a bunch of volunteers. They don't know each other when they step off the plane. But over the course of 9 days, you need to teach them everything for the worst case scenario. And that would be, you'll teach them how to light a fire, how to cook the porridge, how to correctly pack the rucksack, how to administer first aid on others if need be, how to correctly use machetes, how to put up a hammocks, and then really going into the nitty-gritty if a situation happens, say to myself or a leader on the ground, a volunteer will be able to step up, open up that satellite phone, get the coordinates off the GPS, administer the first aid, and in short, get the expedition leader to safety.
And it really does get you out of your comfort zone. I mean, a lot of us had never really built anything in our lives, but with a bit of teamwork, a bit of communication and some dedication, we all did it, didn't we?
Yeah, and I think the proof is in the pudding. You know, you've got 30 volunteers who don't know each other. You know, you don't know what skill sets people have got. But when you pose the group, the task of the day, what's got to be done, you know, it's really great that people step up and they offer their skills. And for those that haven't got the skills, you see that they're really keen to learn. And the power of teamwork, you know, it's very strong, because once the train starts going, the engines get fired up. If you've got a strong team, pretty much anything's achievable.
And do you remember seeing any differences, Sully, from the beginning of how we all went in there and our attitude towards everything? And then 2 months later, after spending all that time in the rainforest, did we develop? Did we change? What did you notice?
Yeah, on day one, when you've got the volunteers, they're very apprehensive about going into the jungle because they think they're facing all these fears. They've got all these fears. And they believe they're facing all these dangers, such as, you know, snakes and bugs and weather and the environment. And can seem very scary. But over the course of 4 to 5 weeks, when you're constantly living in a jungle and around you, you hear the wildlife, you see the orangutans and you smell the elephants, you tune into it and it becomes a very, very powerful. You become connected. And what I notice is people that are very scared going in on a start, when they leave the jungle, I've witnessed it so many times, people are reduced to tears because it's such, you form such a powerful attachment to it, the connection, and you really feel part of it. You feel part of the energy source of that whole jungle. And when you leave, it really does break your heart.
Sully, you've visited all these different environments. So out of all of them, which one is your favourite?
My favourite environment would be the jungle. And that's why I've visited so many countries that have rainforests. I think it's very important for everybody to have an appreciation of the wilderness, because we all search for this Wi-Fi connection to check on apps and, you know, what's going on. But it's nice just to get out into the outdoors and live without all your mod cons and just sit down and listen to nature and just feel the vibe, you know, just feel the pure essence of being outdoors and the energy that it can give you naturally. And it's very fulfilling and uplifting, tranquil and calm, and it's something you can't buy. It's just something you have to go out there and experience and enjoy yourself. If you only stay in one place, it's like you're only going to read one page of the book. If you travel the world, you can read the whole book. You know, there's so much out there to see and do, and it's the more you see, the more you realise you haven't seen, and you just want to keep continuing and doing more. It's called the travel bug.
And for you personally, Sully, how do you think that spending time in the rainforest has shaped you as a person?
It's probably made me a lot calmer. For me, you know, I'm very lucky. I work in the woods on a day-to-day basis, and I believe I've got the best office in the world. you know, tall trees and woods around me. For me, it's amazing. As a person, it keeps me nice and calm, keeps me collective. And I just have appreciation of the simple things in life. You know, I don't need the latest gadgets. I just need to have the ability to light a fire and construct a basic shelter and cook some simple food. And what I've noticed is when you take people out of their comfort zone and you strip them of their identity, you take away their designer clothes, you take away their gadgets, you're left with basically the purest of the person, in which they're just dressed in some basic, you know, outdoor clothing. And that is when you see the true individual. And what's great is at the start, they're very apprehensive, but at the end, they're very empowered by it. And they're almost sad to go back into their previous way of life of being materialistic and consumerism.
Do you think that, I mean, spending time in nature for someone, do you think it can make them more environmentally conscious after spending an amount of time living and appreciating the nature around them?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. You have an appreciation. You know, it's the simple things. When you know how long it takes for a tree to grow, when you know that a tree, the width of your wrist, can take up to 5 years to grow, you're less inclined to cut it down. And it passes on to the simple things that when you go shopping, you do look for companies that, you know, are very sort of eco-friendly. You do query where the wooden furniture comes. You do want to know where the meat is. Is it, you know, battery hen chickens? Is it open range? You become very, very more aware of nature and the knock-on effects of how we affect it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you start questioning things more, don't you, after spending time in nature?
Yeah, for sure. You think of the bigger picture. You certainly think of what life is about. What gets me is I've taken many clients into the jungle and to the woods, all from various backgrounds, from hardened street kids from, you know, schools to, you know, actually millionaires, believe it or not. And what gets me is these people are very, very different in life, in the outside world, but in the jungle or in the woods, they're the same. They react the same to it. The end result, they're always sat around that fire in the night and they always love it. It's very hard to explain people beforehand what it would be like, but when they walk out, they understand what we meant.
It's just one of those things that you have to experience yourself.
For sure. Yeah, and I encourage anybody to simply just get out into the woods, whether it just be a simple walk along a footpath, a canal path, you know, to doing something a little bit more daring, to pitching your tent up in a field, to even, you know, camping out in the woods. I encourage anyone. It is a very, very powerful thing to do. There's nothing to be scared of apart from yourself.
When you have an appreciation of the environment, of when you know how long it takes for flowers to grow, for trees to grow, and how the whole ecosystem is working in sync together, you have a real understanding and respect for it. And you know that, you know, if you used to do anything untowards the anything of the ecosystem, it can have big effects further up the chain. So it's really just having, once you're outdoors, you really tune in and you get a better understanding of everything.
I mean, living in the rainforest brought me back in touch with the natural world. Being born and growing up in the city as well, and especially today, a lot of young people, they don't get the opportunity to go out into nature and really appreciate it.
Having been in the jungles for a considerable amount of time, Borneo, Belize, Papua New Guinea, and lived in this environment, you feel the energy and you see the wildlife and you see the communities and how they're dependent upon it. You know that you can't dismiss these relationships that humans have with the jungles and the rainforests, and they can only be respected. There's lots of indigenous cultures around the world. We can look at the Penan, we can look at any tribes that are around the world. So it's people that belong to a set piece of land. And are they teachers? Yes, in all honesty. They hold so much wealth of knowledge, it's phenomenal. The biggest thing we're up against, though, is capturing this knowledge before it disappears, because it's not always getting passed on from the old generation to the younger generation, which is a very, very sad thing to hear. But you have to remember that some of these communities are dependent upon the jungle all the way around them, and that would be in means of for organic food and for medicinal uses as well of the plants. So it was spending time one-on-one, going out. From the experience, you know, day one, I'd be faced with a patch of jungle that just looks like a bed of leaves, roots, and I can't see anything but, you know, green vegetation. But when you're stood next to an elder and he can point to a certain leaf and say, oh, you know, that can be used for back pain, aspirin, iron deficiency, treating infected wounds, you realise that there is a wealth of knowledge in front of you and uses as well. And it's more or less like going into a pharmacy and asking to get a certain drug for an illness. And that's how locals will use the jungle to their benefit as well, just by collecting and using plants, whichever they need. It's very simple. We just use money to obtain food. But for locals, they use knowledge. The jungle's an amazing place. It's got an abundance of wildlife. And it's there to be, you know, truly, truly, I don't know, just...
appreciated, I think.
Yeah, that's the word, truly appreciated. Because it's not until you actually step foot into it and you see... you see it, you feel it, you smell it, you realise you're stood in something totally amazing that's been, you know, around before us.
Sully, let's talk a little bit about the cultures that you spent time with in the rainforest. What are the names of these cultures in Borneo?
Okay, in Borneo, I spent... my first experience was in Sabah, and it was with the Kelabat people. Another time, it was a few years ago, I spent a large amount of time with the Panan. Now, the Panan live in Sarawak, they're on the Kalimantan border. And for me, these are the penultimate jungle survivalists, because today, predominantly, there are settlements where Panan just have settled. But still, right now, as we speak, there is quite a few hundred families living a nomadic way of life in the jungle. And when you see this, it really is amazing to see in this day and age. And it realises all the things that we have, we truly take for granted, but also we don't need. And I'll give you a case. When I walked in to live with the Panan, I had 1 month, and my aim was to learn about jungle survival. I took with myself hammocks, bashes, mosquito nets, cooking pots, food, medicines, a machete. Fast forward 4 weeks later, I didn't need any of those objects bar a machete. I knew how to use bamboo, how to get water from it, how to make fire from it, how to use it as a cooking pot. I knew how to identify several plants for medicinal use. Whether I got, you know, a rash, I got a cut and it had gone a little bit septic, I knew how to construct basic shelters, how to find food. So when you're walking through the jungle and all you have is just a machete and you carry this knowledge that you've learned from the Panan on what to do and how to live on a day-to-day basis with just a piece of metal, it is amazing. And what really appeals to me is it doesn't cost anything. It's just your own intuition, your own energy of getting out there and doing it.
I was asked by a production company to go to Papua New Guinea, and I lived with some extremely remote communities. It was just myself on my own. I was the fixer, and, you know, all I've got is a really satellite phone and a tracker, spot tracker, and just went out on the ground, did firsthand to gain firsthand evidence. And the biggest thing I find is when you're doing documentaries is you win the locals, you win your program. And when you go into these areas, people, you know, very curious as to who I am. So you're very delicate, you're extremely polite. There'd be a lot of curiosity around you to start with, but then after a day or two, that would kind of subside. And with that, that's when you can silently observe the way of life. But really, the perk is that doing these jobs is when you're setting up a production company, you're able to offer things to the community. If a film crew's going to go back, you ask the community how would they like to benefit from it. And that might be in the form of money or materials that the guys can use, be it bringing in corrugated iron roofs for a local school or mosquito nets. So the great thing is, yeah, TV program gets aired, but the communities will actually benefit from it directly.
I mean, what fascinates me about the cultures out there, Sully, is their knowledge and the amount of knowledge they have on the plants and the rainforest and the biodiversity. It's just this mass knowledge.
Oh, it's the knowledge they've got is phenomenal. Most of the locals haven't learned the knowledge through books. They've been handed down this knowledge from their fathers and their grandfathers. And it can take a whole lifetime just to learn about it. The respect they have for the environment. Now, what really got me was I had the whole aim of going there to learn about jungle survival. That was my childhood dream. But actually, I walked away and my eyes are widened and awoken to the whole deforestation issues of, you know, trees being illegally cut down, the palm oil, and how it directly affects the Penan. For instance, the Penan will choose the best part of the forest where there's lots of game, lots of wildlife, where there's fresh flowing water, where there's an abundance of plants to use for medicines and food. But once you start cutting down trees, all of that changes pretty much instantly. The sediment, okay, will just flow into the waters. The locals can't use those rivers. They can't fish with them. They can't wash with them. They can't drink. The whole wildlife scene changes. It's scared off. It disappears. It's, you know, the impact is huge, and it's very, very sad. And when you're sat with an elder who's crying his eyes out, knowing that no one in the Western world can do anything about it, you're sat there pondering what you can do, and knowing that all you can really do is raise awareness and make your decisions on where you shop back home, which goes back to the whole understanding of where items have come from.
That's so true, Sully. I mean, there's that saying, isn't there, that the world is made up of what you see. And in our everyday lives, we don't really come in contact with the rainforest. I never used to think about the rainforest. It never used to be in my perception until I went and spent some time there with the cultures. And now it's become a big part of my life.
Oh, I know. I know, I've seen how passionate you are about it, Yara, and it's great. And it's great that you pass it on to the youngsters to make them aware. You know, a lot of youngsters will walk into a supermarket and they'll see the pre-packed food, you know, the chickens wrapped up and the meat cut up, but they won't necessarily understand what animal that's come from or how long it's taken for that animal to grow or even where that animal was raised. So the whole awareness thing, you know, it has to be opened up for the younger ones.
One point when I was working, a kid picked up a pine cone and called it an acorn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was just, that kind of made me think a little bit, like, why are we missing this knowledge? I mean, a lot of kids today, they don't get to go out into nature and experience just being outside, you know, whether it's due to the weather or where they live. So these opportunities where young people can come out and spend some time in nature really does develop them.
Oh, totally. What has to be done is the whole health and safety thing. You know, parents and schools, youth organisations, they're all afraid of being sued. So to take away that element, it's far easier to stop a school trip, go into the woods and risk something. But the learning outcomes in a woodland is far more powerful than a classroom. And although it's not very nice for, you know, a child to fall down or to hurt themselves accidentally, the learning outcomes from that is very, very strong, because they know the next time they have to tread a little bit more carefully or choose not to do it. And it's that decision-making process that they learn from a very young age that really helps them get on into later life. So I hope for the generation, the young generation now, that they are allowed to get outdoors as much as possible, that they are allowed to get muddy and grubby and fall over, because that really helps them develop as persons.
I believe so. And talking a little bit, going back, Sully, to the knowledge that these tribal cultures possess about the natural environment, we walk past trees every day, we walk past plants, but we don't really, doesn't come into our frame of thought. But then once you adopt the knowledge of, say, what that tree is or what that plant can do, you start to see nature in a different way and appreciate it more.
Totally, you know. You know, I walk through the forest and people think I'm really, probably it seems a little bit sad, but I get excited when I see a white tree. I know it's silver birch. I know that I can peel the bark off and it's got a very nice resin in it that helped me get a fire. Or I could extract water from it if I wanted to. Or when I see pine trees and you've got the resin, I know that's really good for firelighting. When I see nettles, I know I can make a nice nettle soup or make some cordage. It's amazing. When you have this knowledge and when you do walk around outdoors, you know, what's around you is amazing. Seeing certain types of moss, you know, like sphagnum moss that's been around for thousands of years, that used to be used by the Romans for wound dressing because it's got iodine antiseptic properties in it. I guarantee thousands of people have walked over that moss and not known how it used to be used. But still to this day, it can be used as that. It's just learning about it. What I encourage people when they come into the woods is to gain this hunger for knowledge about the wildlife. Don't just attend a course or come along for the day. Carry on the learning process because just like the elders in Borneo, from the Penan to the Kelabat, they're still learning day to day at the age of 60. And so we're no different as adults here in England. We still have to keep learning day to day because there's so much to learn.
Something I remember as well when living with the Kelabat is when we went out into the jungle and, say, my jungle guide, Madhu, who is also your guide as well, when he'd take you out and he'd talk to you about the trees, he explained that certain types of species and biodiversity can just exist on one particular tree. And if that tree is gone, it wipes out the entire species that's relying on that tree to survive.
Oh, I know. And that's the whole sad part about the deforestation. Once you remove one tiny segment of the jungle, even though they think they've just taken one tree, they've taken out several species and it's irreplaceable. They just won't come back. And the sad part is no one listens to the local knowledge, to the elders of the village who've been living there for, you know, have had generations of families there who have the wealth of it all, but these big government organisations that are just only pursuing money ultimately have no desire to really learn what's there.
And a lot of these cultures, Sully, they view life and their ways in a more sustainable manner. I mean, they think long term, don't they?
They really, yeah. And it is all about sustainability. And the classic case that I've seen was Parry in Sarawak from the Penan. He would go to, say, he'll go to certain areas to hunt the mouse deer or the wild pigs. But he wouldn't overhunt that area. He'll then, you know, once he's got some game, go and choose another area well away. And he'll allow that area to repopulate that he's hunted from. And the same again from when he's tending his crops or collecting wild plants. He wouldn't collect them all. And I think the best example was we went down to the river one night. We threw out a throw line across the river for the fish to get caught in. And we pulled it in 30 minutes later. And I said, Parry, why don't you leave it in there longer? And as he pulled it in, there must have been about 10 to 12 fish. And he said, will you eat all of these fish? And I said, well, no. And he said, well, what's the point in fishing? We will catch them again tomorrow. So it's that whole understanding of only take what you need. That's their motto. Take what you need. Don't take everything like we do.
And allow everything to regrow and regenerate.
Totally. They have got it so right.
Going back to what you were saying about when you go to the rainforest, you can't just pop down the road and go to a corner shop. You can't pop down the road and go to a supermarket. We rely heavily in our society for money to survive. But when you're out in the rainforest, rather than relying on money to survive, the cultures out there are relying on this mass knowledge that has been passed down to survive.
Yeah, and that is their currency, knowledge. You know, the ability to identify plants, the ability to, you know, see where game is, pigs, deers, the ability to use blowpipes. That is their currency, knowledge.
And Sully, I mean, you've spent a lot of time in the rainforest. Do you believe, on a personal level, that there are still plants and species out there that the Western world haven't discovered yet, that possibly these cultures carrying this mass knowledge may still possess, like plants that we haven't discovered yet, that these cultures know about?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. The locals, you know, wouldn't necessarily identify the plants through name. They'd identify the plants through sight, and they'd be able to give you the medicinal use for that plant. And the classic case, again, taken to a small spot of the jungle, you know, 1 meter square, and asked, what do I see? Well, I just saw, you know, some green leaves, some shoots, some roots, some leaves. And I went back there 1 month later, and I could see that there was like five or six, you know, plants that I could use for different things. When you think of the scale of the jungle that you're talking about, the size of a football pitch, for instance, think how many plants you could squeeze in there. And think that some of these football pitches have never been walked on. They've never been explored. The biodiversity, the wildlife, the fauna that's living in them, okay, a lot of it is yet to be discovered. Really is.
And I remember what Madhu was doing as a way to preserve some of the species, as he was part of a project called the Traditional Knowledge Documentation Project. And what this entailed was the community, or people in the community, would go out into the rainforest, sometimes trek up to 3 weeks deep into the rainforest, and they would collect different species of plants and trees, and they would bring these species back to the village and plant them in a medicinal garden. And this was all in efforts to protect the species and biodiversity that was due to be logged. I don't know what efforts you saw, Sully, when you were there.
I didn't come across that, but the efforts I did see would be the older guys sitting the younger ones down and telling them and showing them plants and their uses, so the knowledge would not be lost. That's what I saw. You've got a guy who's 60, like Madhu, who's got all this knowledge. You know, he's only got a short time to pass it all down to the younger guys. And the younger guys were 30. They started learning, you know, at the age of 10. Been learning for 20 years. And apparently they've still got a lot more to learn at that stage. So the wealth of things to learn out there is formidable. Medicine.
When you're faced with nothing, you've just got a piece of metal, but you've got knowledge and an understanding, appreciation of the environment, you could see that it had so many things out there I could use. And the end result, I was able to collect my own food, build my own shelter, get my own fire, just by using, you know, the knowledge Parry gave me. And so the biggest thing I learned was Parry's way of life was sustainability. And it was seeing how the locals had a real respect of their land, and they weren't going to just basically misuse it, because they wanted it to be used for generations to come. So it's only taking what you need and then letting nature basically regrow it or repopulate, whatever it has to do to rejuvenate itself. But the locals would, you know, they're cut into a tree, they'd come back maybe a month later, and this sap is just all poured out of the tree. It's all hardened. But when you're struggling to get a fire lit, and if all the materials are wet, the locals have simply just shaved some of this off into small crystals. Once you get that lit, it acts as like a candle, and it will burn for a long, long time. And it's a gift, and it's just another example of how the locals use their environment to their advantage.
Do you think that spending time in nature is healing for the mind, body, or spirit?
Totally. Yeah, for me, I've always felt a very calming feeling out there. You're not dependent on your gadgets. You're not distracted by your mobile phone and your life. All you're really dependent upon is yourself. And providing you can make some effort, you know, to make yourself comfortable it is really therapeutic. It's amazing. Amazing in the fact that you can just sit, you know, at the base of a tree and just listen to wildlife. And what's great is the wildlife sounds different during the course of the day. The sounds you hear in the morning is not what you will hear at midday. And you won't hear those midday sounds in the evening. And you become in tune. You don't even need to wear your watch because certain beetles will make noises, giving you an alarm call to say, right, time to wake up, or letting you know that there's 1 hour of daylight. And once you realise you don't need all your items around you, it's very empowering.
Like what you were saying, you become in tune with everything. You start to notice the cycle of life and how everything around you is alive and living. And you notice that network of energy.
Yeah, it's totally. It's, you know, it's almost like being a Jedi. You know, you feel the Force. No, honestly. But the biggest thing people are afraid of is letting go. They are so worried about at the start of being hurt or something happening to them as to where they are. Once they get over that, you know, then they start tuning in and then they find it very empowering. And it's because it's so empowering, it's a really nice feeling. And that's why when it's time to leave, and if you've been in the jungle for like, you know, a couple of weeks or a month, that's where, you know, I've witnessed it many times, people crying because they know that they won't experience that feeling again.
Yeah, it's that whole, you feel that fear because you're not in a place where you feel secure and the things that you're used to seeing every day. It's almost like it completely zaps you out of your daily routine and places you in this environment that you're just not used to.
But that's, you know, but that's part of stepping out of your comfort zone, you know. It's just that first step is stepping out. And whenever I take people on trips to jungles or anywhere in the world, people always say to me, what's going to be the hardest part about this expedition? And this, the honesty, I always tell them, the hardest part will be not the big mountain that you climbed or the rivers you crossed or being cold, wet, tired and hungry. That's not going to be the hard part. The hard part will be leaving that place, but also more challenging when you're home and telling people what it was like. So that's the hard part, trying to describe to people how powerful it was to live under that canopy for so long.
And Einstein, one of the greatest minds, said, look deep into nature and you will understand everything.
For sure, totally agree. Get away from all the electronics, just be in the fresh air. It's an amazing place. And once you get used to it, you know, it's there and it's free. I've got a website of elitesurvivaltraining.com. Elitesurvivaltraining.com. Well, the best thing, just follow us on Facebook. I put lots of video clips up there of the jungle and pictures, and you can post questions to me. And it's just a great way to share through this Facebook page of what you love, to show that we all have this common connection, and that is a passion for what we do.
And doing things that make you feel alive.
In the simplest of terms, that is it in a nutshell. Hopefully people will be inspired by it and go, you know what, I'm going to go and do that myself now.
And you also give motivational talks, don't you?
I provide a series of talks to schools and youth groups and again, adults. And this would be all about my personal experiences. One would be Feed the Rat talk, and that would be a story of myself growing up as a young boy that always used to love being in the woods, lighting fires and building dens. I take them on a journey, how I progressed into the Marines, to how I became an expedition leader. And the common theme is just self-belief and to live your dream. There's other talks of living with the Penan, showing their way of life and sustainability. And a more extreme one of when I went to Papua New Guinea and lived with a tribe that recently ceased practicing cannibalism for a documentary I researched.
I remember you telling me the story. You're just sitting there having dinner and you got the, watching EastEnders, and you got this phone call asking you to hunt this ex-cannibal shaman deep in the jungles of Papua New Guinea. And what did you say, Sully?
I said, damn right. I thought about it all for 10 seconds, probably less in all honesty, because I tell you what, the rat was hungry. It needed to get out there to have this crazy adventure. And what's mad, people think it was crazy, and on their terms it may have been crazy, but for me, it was like, it was wicked. And I, in fact, I remember emailing you whilst I was out in Papua New Guinea, Port Moresby, asking you to do some research on this Titicaca. But as you know, I was tasked to find one individual who was filmed in 1968, who was responsible for cannibal raids. And the documentary wanted to follow it up in the modern day, except they didn't know where this guy lived. And in short, over the course of several weeks, I tracked him down and met him face to face. And it was totally fascinating to hang out with him and observe his way of life and also his community.
That's amazing. It sounds like a real Indiana Jones style adventure.
It was. It truly was. But no crystal skulls.
Because when you stop to think what nature's given, don't you think it might be time to give some back?
One big thing about rainforest as well, I mean, just the Amazon rainforest alone produces 20% of the oxygen of the world. That's just the Amazon rainforest alone. So if we imagine all the rainforests, which are all based along the equator, the tropical rainforest, how much oxygen is being produced and the way that it's rapidly depleting.
The world will always be here, but we won't be, because we've used up all our resources. And this is where it comes back to looking at the tribal communities, looking how they sustain themselves. We need to have the same approach. Natural resources, you know, we're taking oil out the ground. That's going to disappear. It's not very friendly. We've got a natural resource. We've got the sun. We've got solar power. We've got wind turbines. Let's get more of those on the go. There's been lots of ways for a more eco-friendly energy, but some of these big giants have put a stop to it, because it's not profitable for them. I know that there's been a big increase in people having allotments, growing their own vegetables.
So my message to everybody is never be afraid to step forward, never be held back by others. And really, if you've got a dream, go out there and live it, because one day it'll be too late for you to do it.
Thanks so much, Sully.
Pleasure, Yara. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Indigenous cultures who live amongst nature will all tell you the same thing, how important nature is, that humans are connected to nature, we're a part of nature. I hope this show has inspired you to remember tribal cultures living in the rainforest are indeed the masters of survival and bushcraft, and that their knowledge of the flora and fauna is precious.
So please do connect, get in touch, share any information or knowledge you have on Indigenous cultural wisdom. It's always great to share this knowledge. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you can catch in the next show.
You're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Yasmin, and that was an interview you just heard with John Sullivan from Elite Survival Training and co-presenter of the show, Yara. If you would like to connect with John, you can reach him via the Elite Survival Training website. To connect with Yara, please email contact@wildeyeadventures.com via the Wild Eye Adventures website, www.wildeyeadventures.com, and myself via earthwitness.news. Shelter, fire, water, and food are what we need to survive, as well as oxygen and human connection. We use money in the modern world to obtain these very basic things for survival. However, there was once a time where we obtained these things via knowledge. Indigenous people around the world today still use this mechanism of survival, using their intricate knowledge of the ecosystem to survive in the natural world. On the Environment and Conservation Show, we are always keen to learn from outdoor instructors with a story to share, or perhaps you have spent time living with an Indigenous community and you have a story you would like to say on the show. We are a community platform giving a voice to the people. Connect with us and get in touch. You've been listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Thank you for listening and goodbye.